Freedom of expression is not enough. We must demand responsible speech. Free speech only works when it is responsible and people in the public eye, television stations, and news organizations need to recognize their power and take responsibility. I know this is a sticky wicket since it sounds like controlling free speech. I will stay away from that very complex legal argument that has tremendous merit. For now, I would like to discuss this responsibility that we all have in life when we speak to our family, our neighbor, the grocery store clerk. When we relate to one another and exchange ideas, we teach each other. It could be as simple as learning about pears from your farmer. Communication is a form of learning on every level. In our current culture, especially in the media, there's a simplification of ideas and concepts. The news is full of morbid hyperboles, silly meaningless chatter, mannerless conversation, and just, well, how shall I put it? Ignorant, irrelevant crap that is pretty much spoon-fed to our society. Unfortunately, the human mind likes to have a quick reward system. The quicker we understand something, the better we feel. You know this from experience. We all picked up books and articles that we pushed away because of its complexity. The brain's reward system acts the same way as sugar, ideas, and opium. As far as the brain circuitry is concerned, it is all the same. The brain likes to understand and feel good as soon as possible. People who profit from television, news, and popularity know this very well. Yes, I have been irritated, disenchanted, and worried about our society. Neil Postman in 1985 published a book titled Amusing Ourselves to Death, Public Discourse in the Age of Show Business, where he warned us that television has conditioned us to tolerate visually appealing material to the detriment of rational public discourse and reasoned public affairs. I bet even poor Neil Postman did not imagine that our public affairs would become a source of entertainment. As a culture, we're suffering from a lack of wisdom. We have lost our ability to distinguish between relevant news and disturbing trash magazine filler. So I cringe, and I crave wisdom. Thus I read. I have been poring over religious studies, comparative religion books, and history books for the past 5 years. This is not because I'm very religious. I don't subscribe to any one specific religion, but I have been craving wisdom. From the Confessions of St. Augustine to Aristotle, Nicomachean Ethics to Plato's Republic, all the way to the Analects of Confucius, to the Upanishads and the Vedas, east, west, north, south, you name it, I'm on a mission to read wisdom. During Roman times, oration was a unique skill, a degree on its own right. Cicero was one of the greatest orators of his time. Reading his speeches gives one goose pimples even from a distance of 2,200 years. Oh, how far we have traveled from looking at public speaking as an art form. There is something wonderful about all these writings, the eloquence, the thoughtfulness, the time that was invested in the formulation of each sentence. The topics were not simplified. As a matter of fact, I often find myself having to reread sentences and pages because of the complexity of the ideas don't always land in my understanding at first glance. But that's exactly why I love reading. My mind is challenged, and my perspective shifts from these remarkable books. The more I read these ancient writers, the more I feel we need a revival. As Renaissance was a resurgence of ancient Hellenism, I crave a wave of intellectual re-enlightenment for our generation. I try to infect my students with some of my excitement. Recently in Spira's teacher training course, I gave my students a homework to read the Yoga Sutras in multiple translations and write a comparison study on one sutra. If you're a teacher, you know what this means to you.
You have to do the homework yourself as well to prepare for class. So I went to my library and pulled down a few different translations of the Yoga Sutras. I pushed my imaginary geek glasses further up my nose as I sat down on the floor surrounded by my books. The Yoga Sutras are a collection of so short aphorisms. They're kind of like Cliff Notes versions of the very, very wordy Upanishads and the even older Vedas. Since these writings were they made up of many hundreds of thousands of pages, these sutras were meant as a memorization tools for concepts. My eye got stuck on a second book of sutras. Avidya Ashmita Raja Dvesha Abhinivesha Panchaklesha. So avidya means ignorance or miscomprehension. Ashmita is ego or egoness. It's kind of like the I in the self. Raja is desire, addiction. It's your almost like habitual things. Dvesha is aversion or hatred. Dvesha could be also like the thing that we want to stay away from because once we had a bad experience or we're not sure about it, so we avoid it. Abhinivesha is fear and aversion. It could mean fear of death, a desire for continuity, but in the greater scheme of things, it also means like clinging. When you cling to an idea, when we fear the new, that's Abhinivesha working on you. Pancha is five. Klesha is kind of causes of afflictions, okay? So B.K.S. Iyengar translates this as, and I quote, "The five afflictions which disturbs the equilibrium of consciousness are ignorance or lack of wisdom, ego, pride of the ego or the sense of I, attachment to pleasure, aversion, pain, fear of death, and clinging to life." He further elaborates on the meaning, stating, and I quote again, "a lack of knowledge combined with pride or arrogance infiltrates the ego, causing conceit and the loss of one's sense of balance," closing quote. Whew, but that's so good, I gotta read it again. So a lack of knowledge combined with pride or arrogance infiltrates the ego, causing conceit and the loss of one's sense of balance. Wow. And really the goal of yoga is to bring awareness to these false conceptions and provide a new perspective where the student can see the ego, the fear, the hatred, and the desire from this awareness, finally be able to let go and find a peaceful and more constructive way of existence. The I, the ego, or you could also say the opinion, always wants to get stronger. When it feels threatened, it attacks. You can experience this yourself. Just think of the last time someone's challenged your point of view, even in simple discussions. Last night, I was looking for thyme in my kitchen, and my husband said that if I organized my spices, I would not go through this dance every time I cook. I fiercely defended my organized clutter as a way of life. Now, it is evident to me that organizing spices would be very advantageous both to my cooking and to my time, so why do I insist that my way is better? This may be a silly example, but I wanted to give you a silly example to point out just how much our brain is wired to defend the self. But what is the self? Getting into that would take me about 100 pages. Hindus and Buddhists have written over 10,000 pages on this topic. I will spare you from my long-winded argument and simply say, there's no self. Or let's put it differently, there is no fixed self. When we cling to who we think we are, when we refuse to see deeper or form another opinion or point of view, we end up suffering. This is exactly what Sutra 2.3 is warning us about. If you cling too much to your ideas, if you fear to change, which is the meaning of abhinivesha, you will be living a life of misconception, avidya, and misconception leads to dukkha, which is kind of like a heaviness in the heart. It is not a coincidence that ancient wisdom writers, both East and West, have been occupied with ideas around the self and the ego. Humanity has known for a long time the traps of our mind to avoid avidya, miscomprehension, which can lead to hate, is exactly why we have to practice responsible speech. Just like sugar causes a burst of happiness in our brain, so do our self-affirming opinions. It is much easier to agree with someone than to understand the topic significantly. I get why evolution developed these circuits. Our brain is busy. A lot has to happen in our neurobiology just to satisfy basic functioning. Add to that work and kids and basic human productivity, and all of a sudden our processors is strapped, and so you can't just insert and click more RAM into your brain, like into your computer, you can add more RAM to function better, right? Our brain simply is just forced to simplify. But this simplification is just like sugar, really useful when we need a little energy, but disease-causing if used all the time. Knowing that sugar and simplified opinions are addictive substances. I'm going to read this again. Sugar and simplified opinions are addictive substances. We must take action to use them responsibly. This responsibility increases in a logarithmic fashion for television stations, public service providers, government officials, and teachers. Unfortunately, when money measures our power in the universe, the powerful will use more and more quote-unquote sugar till society is in a diabetic coma. So you and I and everyone must demand responsible speech. We must insist on intelligent, challenging arguments because it is our responsibility to not allow freedom of expression to become empty chatter, an opiate of the masses. Thank you.